Hey, this is Ali Ciardo and the Photo Field Notes podcast. And I just want to start by saying thank you so much to all of you who reached out with the sweetest notes over the last few weeks. It honestly, it like brightens my day every single time I get a note, and I appreciate every single one. And hopefully I've replied to all of you. I'm really bad at replying to messages on social media. So if I haven't, it's not anything personal. I'm just terrible at it, but I absolutely appreciate it. So today's interview is with Nathan Holritz, and he actually recorded this interview a long time ago, but we're talking about kind of setting yourself up to outsource and get help before you need it. So it's kind of relevant to my life right now. So enjoy the episode. Thanks for your patience, and I'll be back again soon with more.
Welcome to the Photo Field Notes podcast, where you'll find stories, tips, and inspiration from professional photographers to get you taking action in your own business and making your business dreams a reality.
Hey, everybody, this is Ali Ciardo, and today I am here with a fellow podcaster. Nathan Holritz is the founder of Photographer's Edit, and he's also the voice behind the Boca Photography podcast. So we had some fun. I was on Nathan's podcast, and now, you know, of course, we have to return, exchange, and share information. So he's today on the Photo Field Notes podcast talking about his experience and so many things that he's learned. So I'm excited to have him here today. Nathan, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It is fun to kind of flip the tables, and now I get to be slightly nervous and make sure I sound just right for your podcast.
Thank you. Always sound great. You have this great radio voice.
Oh,
okay.
Thank you.
Plus, it's super fun. I always like to start with, I say we as though there's more than one person. It's definitely just me. I always like to start with just the story behind how you got to where you are today. So tell me as much or as little about how you got started first as a photographer, and then how you kind of transformed into this newer, I guess not new at this point, but the next phase of your business with Photographer's Edit.
So I started in wedding photography back in 2001. And I was interested in photography. I think it's kind of that stereotypical story that you hear, you know, you're interested in photography, you buy a semi fancy camera, you start taking pictures. In this case, my significant other at the time had put together a portfolio of images that I had photographed with this. It was a Minolta film camera, 35mm film camera. And kind of long story short, somebody saw that portfolio of images, referred me to a friend of theirs to photograph their wedding. And I shot that first wedding for $350. I ended up losing money because I think just to have the film processed for the $250 or $350 that I charged him, I spent just as much or close to it developing the 10 rolls of film or whatever from that day.
Yeah, I was going to ask. I was like, wait a minute, film, that had to be expensive. So pretty much it was a wash, or maybe you spent money starting out. Okay, so from there, what happened next?
Well, it all kind of happened quickly, fortunately. The next year and a half, I shot something like 15 weddings. And the following full year, I shot 30 weddings. So the business grew very, very quickly, and had the opportunity to move out of the field that I was in at the time, which was optics. I was an optician and went from that into photography full time, and that's where it all started, if you will. In 2008, you alluded to Photographer's Edit. I had the opportunity to start a company called Photographer's Edit, which offers custom post-production to professional photographers. I started it largely because I needed a solution. I'm kind of an OCD perfectionist type. And I was processing images for, you know, whatever it was at the time, 30 weddings, 30 to 40 weddings in a year. And that's just mind-numbing work to sit in front of the computer and process images. And so I needed a solution. And there weren't a lot of options in the industry at the time. The options that were there, the one in particular that I can think of, was extremely expensive, like $600-$800 to have a wedding processed. And it was a complicated process to even figure out what it would cost. And so I saw an opportunity in the industry to start an editing company that would both be simple and much more accessible for a wider range of photographers when it came to the price point. And so here we are. That was Photographer's Edit. And it started the company then, and here we are. It's over 10 years later now.
I also have to know, because I know when I originally looked into outsourcing my editing, it was very different. So were you actually shipping hard drives back and forth when you first started?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I laugh because this is something that we get now. For the longest time, we did deal with hard drives. And Jelly Bellies are kind of traditionally my favorite candy. I even had the opportunity at one point to have conversation with the creator of Jelly Bellies, the original Jelly Bellies, and he's quite an interesting personality in and of himself. They did a Netflix had a documentary about him on there. Anyway,
nice, love that.
Yeah, but it was fun to we would actually stick these little mini packs of Jelly Bellies into the box with the hard drive and send that back to our clients, and that was a thing that went on for years and years. But fortunately, three versions of Lightroom ago, something like that. Lightroom, Adobe released this technology called Smart Previews, which are like mini RAW files. And so that meant that roughly 10% the size of the original RAW files could be transferred very easily through a service like Dropbox. And that simplified the process of transferring orders back and forth. And so we don't do hard drives anymore.
So I'm curious, did your business grow as a result of that change in Lightroom?
That's a good question. I don't think the growth was directly associated with that particular change, but you know, I'm looking for ways to simplify user experience. When I think about companies that I have an experience engaging with, third-party companies, as a consumer myself, I particularly enjoy those interactions with companies where the user experience is extremely simple, right? The barrier is there's a minimal barrier to entry. And I think it's something that we have to consider as business owners when we create a business, that we make it as easy as possible to engage with our brand. And so that was one less complication, one less variable in the process of using our service. And I think that made a difference, certainly, in the overall user experience with Photographer's Edit.
Yeah. Well, I know for me, I always say, like, as a study of one person, a survey of one, I know for me, I considered outsourcing, but the whole idea of mailing hard drives was just too much for me. And I didn't outsource until it became easier through the smart catalogs. And so that's been a game changer for me, definitely. But I want to take a step back before we get into it. I definitely want to talk about outsourcing and kind of journeys into that and making it work and who it's good for and all of these things. I think we all have had, if we've done it, different experiences with outsourcing. But taking a step back before we even get into that, I want to just talk about balance and what does balance mean to you? Or what do you think as photographers, what does balance look like? This is going to be different for everybody. So I just want to hear your personal opinion about that word. It's like a hot word and it's loaded with a lot of meaning for different people.
It is. And I've kind of taken a step back from my obsession over the idea of that so-called balance, because you summed it up brilliantly really there at the end. It looks different for everybody, right? And that's really the answer. Like, I really don't have to say much more, in all honesty. I think the key is understanding what it is that you're actually trying to achieve, first of all, with your personal life. And this is something that we do talk a lot about on the podcast. I'm extremely, I'll borrow a cliche word here, passionate about this idea that we are very, very clear about what it is that we're trying to achieve with our personal life. That should then translate to how we're spending time in business, the business model that we create, the target clients that we're going after, how we spend time day to day. And then at the end of the day, we also are going to have, along with those goals, certain priorities or values. For me, connection is huge. So if what I'm doing in business is taking away from an opportunity to be able to connect, to develop and maintain, or maybe I should say it in the other order, maintain and more importantly, develop relationships on an intimate level, then I'm short-selling myself, and ultimately I'm short-selling those that I'm connecting with. So my overarching goals are largely driven by my value set. Connection is one of them. And so for me, balance is going to be a reflection of those values. And so, again, we're back to your original point, which is that it does look different for everyone. It's not that we're supposed to spend, you know, and I put in air quotes, supposed to, that we're supposed to spend X amount of time a day working, or that we're supposed to spend X amount of time a day working on our relationships, or we're supposed to spend an X amount of time a day, you know, on our hobbies or doing some type of charity work. There is no real rule in the end when it comes to this. I would venture, I'm personally biased when it comes to relationships. I experienced the other end of being I'll say close relationship with somebody who prioritized work way more than relationships. And I know what it feels like to be on the other end of that. So when it comes to my relationship with my kids, my relationship with my significant other, I want to make sure that what I'm doing with my business ultimately sets me up to be able to focus on my relationship with them. And if all we're ever doing is sitting behind the computer as business owners, I don't know, it just feels like we're missing out on a lot that life has to offer. Certainly relationships, but also just, you know, living. I ride motorcycles. I love to travel. There's so many different opportunities to learn and grow as an individual, whether it's reading or traveling to those places and learning in person. And of course, the list goes on and on and on. But I just rambled on, and really what we could do is sum this whole thing up by saying what exactly it is that you said, which is a balance looks different for everyone. Just make sure, I will add to that, just make sure that your relationships aren't suffering as a result of the so-called balance that you have in your life.
But I'm curious, taking that just one little step further on the balance side, because you now run a business that might be seen as a little bit more traditional in terms of probably the hours that you work, at least in terms of when you need to be in the office, when you're running, and maybe that looks a little bit different. But when you were a full-time photographer, you know, as photographers, we're often working on Saturdays, we're often working in the evenings. And so what did it look like for you when that was what you were doing? How did you kind of balance out working on weekends or working in the evenings and still feeling like you had time for those relationships?
That's a good question. And I worked with somebody who was my significant other and my business partner. And we had two kids together. And so prioritizing time, particularly with the kids, was important. You know, there was also a conversation that we used to have about trying to, like, we'd gone on a date night and trying to avoid, and again, I'll put in air quotes, avoid having conversation about business. But the reality was, you know, we were doing life and business together. And if we wanted to talk about business, I don't think that was necessarily a bad thing. We were still prioritizing a relationship. We were spending time together. But particularly when it came to the kids, we would do something. And I think, you know, this is where this, again, cliche word of intentionality comes into play here. And it's no longer cliche when you actually apply it. And I think there is some significance to being intentional. And it starts with what I referred to earlier, that big picture view idea, and then it trickles down. So when it came to our relationship with our kids, particularly at a younger age, making sure that they had that time, that attention, that time from us. We started with something called Fun Monday before the kids started in school. So Monday was the day off. You know, after the wedding weekend, we'd take Monday off, computers get shut down, and they knew that our attention was going to be given to them, our son in particular at that age. And my son is now 17, my daughter's 14. And so anyway, Fun Monday is how it started. Once school started, then it shifted to Fun Sunday. And again, there was this dedicated day where computers get shut down. The focus, the time is on family and spending time together, going and doing something. We live in this beautiful area called Chattanooga, Tennessee, and we've got this aquarium and a cool children's museum and beautiful outdoors that you can go explore. And so there's plenty of opportunity to go do things together and do so consistently. And of course, the cool thing is when you create that expectation for your kids, or it could be your significant other or whoever, you put it out there and say, this is what I'm committing to. They kind of have a tendency of holding you accountable at that point too.
I like the idea of making it a thing, like a tradition, almost a reoccurring event. And then last question, and this is all just kind of curiosity. When they were younger, did you have childcare help, or were they home? So when you were doing that editing yourself, what did that look like?
We did. We were fortunate to have friends in particular that were spending a lot of time taking care of our son and our daughter. And so that made a big difference. We didn't have a lot of family in town that had I guess at least a flexible enough schedule to be the primary caregivers, if you will. So having friends step in made a massive, massive difference in the development of our kids growing up, particularly on those weekend weddings. Even after I transitioned to focusing more on Photographer's Edit, you alluded to maybe a more traditional daily schedule. Fortunately, I still have a lot of flexibility. Our kind of corporate headquarters, if you will, is just outside of Cleveland, Ohio. I'm still based in Tennessee. So I still get to, in many ways, set my own schedule. I have a lot of flexibility there. And so now my schedule revolves more around my kids' school schedule, where I know that, you know, after I drop them off at school in the morning, I can go to the gym, start my day with a workout, and then get into work-related activities for the rest of the day, knowing that they're going to come home around 3 o'clock, 3 to 5 o'clock or so, depending on what's going on with their school activities or otherwise. And so I can be more intentional about the way that I'm spending my time during the day. So then in the evening, I don't have to spend too much more time in work, and I can focus my attention on them.
I love hearing that. I think that the flexibility is probably my favorite thing about running my own business. And lately, as it's been warming up here in Michigan, I've been walking. We've been taking turns with the neighbors walking our kids to school. We live in an area where it's neighborhood school. And actually, the younger kids get on the bus from there to go to the next school. But it's just great. It's like getting out. And I find that in the morning, even if I get up early, I feel like I'll look at the clock and 2 hours later, I've done nothing but get kids to school. You know, it takes probably 30 minutes by the time they stop and look at every flower along the way. And we get there and I walk back. And so I might not even shower until close to 9, but I don't care. And I know that a lot of people say like, oh, you need to have this morning schedule where you've done everything by 8 a.m. And I'm just not that person. But I love that we have that choice to, to make that decision to either get up early and do it or to start a little bit later or to end the day a little bit earlier when kids get home. I love having that flexibility. All right. Let's talk
I have to jump in and say here.
Yeah.
I have to say though, there is, you know, you talk about having the flexibility. I think there is also what we also see in our industry, unfortunately, a lot of times is that photographers are running their businesses in such a way that many times they're reacting to what's going on in their business and they get overwhelmed. So we can, I guess that the emphasis being on the word can there, we can have that flexibility, but it does require intentionality, right? Deciding ahead of time, this is what I want out of life. And so because of that, then this is how I'm going to run my day today. And some of it may include that kind of even flexibility in the morning. I think that's great. I think, again, we should be taking advantage of that. But that kind of flexibility can't happen unless there is, at least not consistently, unless there is some intentionality that goes into the way that we are both living and running our businesses.
Yes, it's building in time to literally stop and smell the flowers because that's what five-year-olds like to do all morning.
100%. That's so great.
All right, but that's a great segue because I was going to ask you about kind of taking that a step further, talking about business workflow, because in order to have that flexibility, we have to have a handle on the workflow of our business so that we're not just like, oh, shoot, somebody just emailed me and I have this thing coming up and I forgot and I don't have a reminder and what's happening here and here and here and I'm chaotic. So what mistakes do you think that you see photographers making when it comes to kind of planning out their workflow?
It's such a loaded question. I think I like to start with philosophy, right? Because if we don't, it's one thing to learn tools. Like I could say, hey, you know what? One thing that photographers don't do is have a really great task and project management system in place. But and I could recommend the one that I used. It's called Todoist, and it's a really great system. But if you don't understand the philosophy, the principles that drive how to use that tool, then you may use it for a day or two. You may say, oh, that looks really cool. I need to try that. But you're not actually going to take advantage of that tool because you don't understand the principles that drive it. So I would again go back to, I know it sounds so repetitive, but I think, first of all, go back to making sure that you have a clear understanding of what it is that you're trying to achieve in life. What is this kind of the so-called ideal life? What does that look like for you? Be really clear about that and then break it down so that when you're deciding how to, and by the way, you should be deciding how to, you don't just react to everything coming in. We leave notifications on our phone and our computer and it's constantly dinging and buzzing. And we're getting phone calls and text messages and emails and constantly reacting to that stuff, social media notifications. Decide ahead of time, be proactive. And I'm eventually answering your question with this principle of proactive versus reactive, but decide how it is that you want to spend your time based on that overarching kind of big picture view and your value set. Decide how you're going to spend your time, and that time should be focused on proactive tasks versus reactive tasks. And really the difference is the proactive tasks move your personal life forward. You're trying to achieve certain goals. By doing this list of three things, you're a step closer to whatever it is, going on that trip to Tuscany in Italy. Or on a business level, by doing this particular thing, you're that much closer to booking this client who's going to add, you know, $3,000 to your bottom line for the year. But the proactive tasks are those things that actually enable you to move your personal life forward and that you're reaching personal goals, or your business is actually helping increase your bottom line. And then you have reactive tasks, which are those things that you have to do. Yes, you do have to respond to social media. You have to respond to email. But those things are, you're reacting to them, first of all, rather than deciding ahead of time how you're going to manage them. At least a lot, if not most photographers, just kind of react to them as they're coming in. You're reacting to those things, and they have to be done, but they don't necessarily require your involvement. And they certainly don't enable you to increase your bottom line, at least not immediately. So my my tendency, I tend to lean toward doing things that are going to increase my bottom line and more on a bigger picture level. I want to run my company like a CEO, not like an employee. And so my focus on proactive versus reactive, I'd like it to be skewed in the direction of something like 3-1, right? 75% of my time spent on the proactive tasks and then 25% on the so-called reactive. So when it comes to workflow, we could go so many different directions, but I think it starts, first of all, with that overarching, that big picture view, the value set, what's driving what you do on a big picture level. But then secondly, focusing on the proactive versus the reactive.
Okay, so two things there. One, I really do like that. Starting with intentionality, and one exercise that I did that helped me with this was to look at people who I admire, and not just who I admire for one little slice, because it's easy to look at that one little slice and admire that, but people who I admire for the whole picture, people who have what I picture as the balance or the lifestyle that I admire, that I like, that I want. And I found that when I did that exercise of sitting down and looking at the people who I admired for the whole picture, it was not the same as the people who I admired for that little slice. And I actually kind of shifted my intentionality as I looked at, oh, I actually like this person who maybe takes on less work and outsources their work and spends their time traveling and spends their time here, or, you know, just different things than you might see as traditional success.
Right.
So starting with that kind of initial intentionality. And then for those who are listening and saying, okay, that's great, Nathan, I know that I need to have more time spent on proactive versus reactive. What does that actually look like? How do they make a point to put their time in there when they feel like they're overwhelmed with the reactive stuff as it is?
That's a great question. So it really starts, first of all, with taking advantage of technology. And again, these principles that I'm sharing, it's not that they're earth shattering, right? It's not, you've likely heard this information in one form or another before, but the difference is when you actually take and do something with it. So first of all, we have these crazy things, these phones in our lives that are, they can be a blessing and a curse, right? But the reality is there is so much technology innate to that phone, or even on your computer, your laptop, you do a quick search online. There are so many tools out there that enable you to, first of all, automate these reactive tasks. When it comes to management of communication, for example, there's so many different CRMs out there, and I'm not going to plug any particular one, but there's so many platforms that enable you to be able to manage your communication efficiently, automate some of that even. And so taking advantage of those tools that enable you to automate those busy work, those tasks is really important. And I will mention one in particular, Calendly is something that I use for scheduling podcast interviews. Actually, I've done about 270 interviews or so now. And if I were to have managed the scheduling of those interviews via email, it would have been a nightmare. I mean, I'd spend, you know, half my day back and forth in email communication, just scheduling a podcast interview. Instead, I give the potential guests to my podcast access to my calendar via Calendly, and they're able to go on there, pick a date and time that works best for them. And then it automates communication following the scheduling of that interview. So that's just one small example, but very simply leveraging technology. My suggestion to those of you listening in, all of those, in fact, an exercise that I've recommended to those that I've taught before and spoken to, if you take literally everything that you do on a day-to-day basis, literally from the time that you get up in the morning to the time that you go to bed, go ahead and label, make a list of those things in great detail. It may take you 20, 30 minutes to do. But then next to each of those tasks or those activities, label them proactive or reactive based on the definition that I gave you earlier. And then take those, that list of reactive tasks, and I dare you to do a Google search with those tasks, because the reality is there is probably a piece of software or a service or both out there that can handle that reactive task for you, at least part of it, maybe automate it, maybe simplify it for you. And maybe actually just do the whole thing for you. Take advantage of 2019 technology and services that will free you up. You can literally delegate most, if not all, of that busy work in one form or another to technology or to third-party services. So that'd be the first step. The next I already alluded to, which is to simplify. So if you're clear about what it is you want to do in life and, of course, as a result, in business, that acts as a filter. So you can literally look at any and everything in your life, physical or intangible, and say, does this enable me, help me to reach my personal goals, my professional goals? If not, I'm going to get rid of it. And that includes software that includes hardware, the things in your camera bag, the stuff sitting around your house, whatever it might be. It can literally filter those things out. And I live very much a minimalist lifestyle. My apartment that I'm in looks kind of like a college student lives in it or something. I mean, there's very, very little decoration. There's very, overall, very little stuff. I mean, I could move out of my house if I had to, probably in 3 or 4 hours, if even that. It's very, very, very minimalist in nature, but that simplifies my life. There's less stuff that I have to worry about internally and externally because of the way that I live my life. And so simplifying what you do on a day-to-day basis, again, using your big picture view as a filter makes a big, big, big difference. And then the last thing that I would suggest is to delegate. So, you know, you've automated as much as you can. In fact, we could even start with simplification. Get rid of all the stuff that's not relevant. The next step is to automate as much as of the rest of it as you can. And then to delegate, and I alluded to this earlier as well, the idea of delegating something that, again, it's not directly associated with increasing your bottom line, or maybe in some form or fashion, it's going to help, but it doesn't absolutely require your involvement. We have a tendency as photographers to be a little bit egotistical in thinking that we are the only ones that can provide this experience to a client or a potential client. And I think you're short selling yourself with that mentality. So I would suggest that you delegate, learn how to delegate, whether it's something like email or album design, accounting for sure. Something that I did not do enough of was delegating and getting help with my accounting work early on and being consistent in that. And you'll pay a price for that. So delegate your accounting work. Naturally, I would talk about editing, because editing is the most time consuming element of running a photography business. If you're a full-time wedding or portrait photographer, delegate that editing work, even if it's part of it, because it saves such a massive amount of time. But that's the third step. So we'll go simplify, automate, and then delegate.
Yeah, and that's a good segue, because I wanted to talk about that anyway. But before we get into outsourcing your editing specifically, because I know you have some great insight into what that looks like and doing it the right way, what do you think is stopping people? You kind of already alluded to this, but what do you think is stopping people from delegating, from getting help?
Yeah, and I to be clear, I don't want to be harsh. When I say the word ego, that might kind of rum some people the wrong way. I have an ego. We all have egos. This is the way that we perceive the world in one way or another. And the assumption that we make is that a client sees what we see, right? So we're projecting, which is another thing that we as human beings have a tendency to do a lot of. Again, I'm raising my hand. I'm guilty of it too. But we assume that what we think or feel about our images, the nuances that we notice in those images, that our client's going to notice those things. And that assumption, unfortunately, gets in the way of then comfortably delegating the work to somebody else. Because the reality is 90, 95% of those clients don't notice. They're not going to look at an image. In fact, I shot weddings for over 10 years. I started at 350. I think I mentioned that earlier, and shot weddings for $10,000. So I worked with a range of clients. And not once did I have a client come to me and say, those images are pretty great, but I noticed that, you know, five of the images in the portrait session were a little bit too magenta, or, you know, six of the images from the ceremony, they were a little bit too contrasty. Can you dial that down 20 points? These kinds of details that a lot of photographers pay so much attention and time to, they're not things that that our clients or potential clients are going to notice. And that doesn't minimize the significance of us continuing to improve and to push ourselves and to hold ourselves to a standard, but holding ourselves to and actually projecting our standard, if you will, onto the client, I think is a lot of what gets in the way. Because outside of cost, the thing that photographers say to me the most about what causes them to be apprehensive in delegating editing is that they're afraid that their brand is going to suffer as a result, that if they aren't the ones touching that, it will actually cause their brand to suffer. And the reality is, in most cases, that's just not the case.
Yeah, and I can totally raise my hand in terms of being guilty of that exact thought process of like, oh no, I love to have control. So it is, it's a hard thing to let go of. Do you have a sense for when photographers come to your team, do you have a sense for what kind of drives them there? Like what point they tend to be at? Are they just so good at planning that they know they're going to need it? Are they usually at a point of desperation? What are you seeing when photographers come to your team?
I think a lot of it is desperation. You know, that's just this, like, I am absolutely overwhelmed and I need help. And so now I need to try to figure out how to go about using your service and delegate that process, delegate the editing work so that I can get some relief from, I'm sitting in front of my computer for all hours of the day and or night. I'm missing out on time with my significant other, with my kids. I'd love to be able to watch Netflix without editing. I hear from photographers, you hear this, the photographers talk so much about editing and watching Netflix at the same time. And I'm not sure how that goes together exactly, but maybe you just want to totally chill out and not have to think about work. But I think a desperation is a lot of what drives photographers, rather than that kind of proactive notion of, all right, here's how I'm going to delegate my this thing in my business, this reactive work, so I can get freedom. But ultimately, this ties to a really important principle that's totally relevant to what we're talking about, which is, again, that we want to look at our business as a CEO. If we're constantly reacting to things incoming, that's the way that an employee functions in a business. We're not employees, or at least I hope that we aren't. We are the ones that started this company. We're the founder. We're the CEO. And what that means is that we need to learn to look at our company on a bigger picture level. And if all we're doing is constantly reacting to the minutia, then we won't have the opportunity to look at our company from a bigger picture level and take it the direction and to the level that it could potentially go to.
Yeah, I think I talked about this in terms of my own experience with outsourcing. And I like that it all kind of ties back around to that intentionality, that instead of waiting until we are desperate, we should really take a step back and look at how we can design this life that we want. And so for me, even though I actually really like editing to some extent, I don't necessarily want to edit every wedding, especially with associates in terms of scaling up. And so for me, it was important to make sure that I could edit if I wanted to, because I like podcasts and it's relaxing. I like to spend a day here and there just sitting down and having just that relaxing listening, etc. But I don't necessarily want to do it every day. And so to have someone who I know I can go to and I know it's going to be done to the style that I like, it's going to look quality, I'm going to get it in a good amount of time, I want to have that set up ahead of time so that if I'm going on vacation or I have multiple weddings because of associates or I'm shooting multiple weddings, I know that my time is managed and that I'm not going to be where I was 3 years ago, sitting at a lake house with my friends, desperately trying to edit photos instead of sitting out there at the campfire or in the lake, in the water, enjoying my time. So it's being, again, proactive. I think that's great.
Yeah, there is that cumulative effect. And I like that you point that out, that you're thinking longer term, like in a month or two or 3 months or in 6 months or whatever it is, I want to be able to go do this thing. I was on Facebook earlier today, and a motorcycle buddy of mine posted that he was going to a racetrack in like 3 weeks or so. And if I was so caught up in the minutiae of reacting to any and everything coming into my business, not running my company like a CEO, then the idea that I could be like, oh, yeah, I want to go do that, and just click the button, order the tickets, and be there, having that kind of freedom, that flexibility, that doesn't just happen on its own. You've got to be intentional in creating the lifestyle and the business that will enable you to do that. But it does take intentionality. The other thing, though, that you said that's, I think, important to note is this is not an all or nothing proposition. I like editing images myself personally, and I don't normally. We've got a wonderful team that actually does that work, but I still enjoy being able to just play with images and maybe apply a preset here and there and make this adjustment thing. I get that can be even soothing. It can be fun to kind of tap into your creative side. I totally get it. So this is not necessarily an all or nothing proposition, whether it's editing or anything else. You can delegate or outsource even part of that busy work, and it'll save you some time. But the reality is, the average wedding photographer, for example, is spending probably 12 to 16 hours per wedding. Do the math where you multiply that out times 10, 15, 20, 30 weddings a year. And even if you were to delegate just part of that, the amount of time that you'd get back for life, for living, actually living, sitting behind your computer is not living, actually getting out and living and connecting with other human beings would be amazing. And that's just outsourcing half of it. The other side of this too, that's important to note is, I was a wedding photographer. So one of the biggest sources of business for me was relationship with a wedding coordinator here in Chattanooga. I don't have time to develop relationships that are going to drive business. Again, when I'm sitting behind a computer, and as much as a lot of photographers these days see the connection on Facebook as a relationship, there is nothing like going and sitting and having coffee or lunch and, you know, going, doing a free portrait session for the family of the coordinator or the family of this business owner who might bring more work to your portrait business. There is nothing that will be a substitute for in-person connection. So when you delegate that editing, and again, it's not specific to editing, any of this busy work that's taking up so much of your time, that frees you up to go develop relationships that will actually enable you to grow your business. If I take one wedding and I conservatively, it only takes me 8 hours to edit that wedding. If I spend the first 2 hours of that, let's say I take 2 hours, I'm like, hey, you know, we'll call her Sarah. Sarah is the coordinator. Sarah, I'd love to sit down and have coffee with you, or I'd love to take you to lunch. I'd really, and be upfront. There's no kind of sleazy salesman or woman here. We're like being upfront with this person that you want to develop a working relationship with them, but you'd love to take them to coffee and get to know them a little bit. So you spend a couple hours doing that. At the end of that, you're like, you know what? This was a great connection. I'd love to work with this person. We connected well in conversation. Hey, Sarah, this has been awesome. I'd still really, really love to work with you, but I want to make sure I'm adding value to our relationship. Can I do a portrait session for you? Can I do some, you know, headshots for your new website? Can I photograph your family? Another couple hours, and you've added value to their life. And so you're 4 hours into the 8 hours saved from outsourcing or delegating that editing work, and you're well on your way to beginning this relationship that can generate thousands of dollars in business for you, and you still have 4 hours left, and that's just one wedding. So you see, when you start to break this down, the time cost is so significant sitting in front of your computer. You have opportunity to get so much of that back if you're willing to give up a little bit of control.
Yeah, that's so well said. It seems obvious. And I think when I polled my audience, those who were parents, most of them did not even have, I think, did not have childcare or did not have a lot of childcare. So yeah. That alone, just the stress of that starting yeah. just there, I think it's a yeah. great solution. Okay. I know from personal experience kind of some of the challenges that have come along with getting started in outsourcing. It's not necessarily a one-step process. It can be a bit of a process to get there. So tell me a little bit about what that looks like, getting to that place of comfort, getting to that place of getting into a groove with your editor. How does your team work when it comes to, okay, here I am, either hopefully I'm being proactive and I'm going to plan a wedding that's going to be edited in advance and build that relationship, or maybe more commonly, oh my gosh, I'm desperate, help. What does it look like from there?
Well, it all centers around communication. And the analogy that I like to use is, for example, I worked retail. So when I went and worked for Dillard's, it's a department store chain, years and years ago, I think around college, I didn't go to Dillard's and they said, okay, Nate, get out on the sales room floor and go sell those clothes. And that was the end of the communication, right? When I began working for Dillard's, there was training, and then there was ongoing interaction and feedback from my manager or otherwise. Communication is absolutely key if you're going to hand something over to somebody else, have them do something for your company. And so photographer's edit is the employee. You're the employer. You're the boss. We're your employee. You get to tell us what to do, but you have to understand that any kind of employer-employee relationship, there's communication, and it's not just a one-time thing. It's ongoing. So our platform is designed largely around, and workflows designed largely around communication. The first thing that we do when you create an account is to ask for your editing style, and we walk you through the process of communicating, choosing and or communicating your editing style to us in a way that is both visual and textual. So we need the visual reference, because you could say, hey, I like a warm white balance. And that means, you know, 100 different things, literally, to 100 different photographers. So we want a visual point of reference. So we ask for before and after examples. And then we ask you to designate your white balance and contrast and brightness preferences, and to give us additional text-based instructions that should ultimately reflect that visual before and after. So we have this picture of your editing style. Then when you submit an order, we have that editing style that you've given us, your profile, if you will, as a point of reference when we process your images. So we're not just processing them blindly. We aren't just editing for professional wedding photographers and portrait photographers and commercial photographers. We're also custom editing for those professional photographers. So we actually want to process the images based on your style. So that's kind of the major first step. But because it's all rooted in communication, the other significant component of that relationship is the feedback process. So let's say you get that first order back. And actually, let's go back to the analogy about the department store worker, me, the department store worker. Or I could go back to my Baskin and Robbins days. Do you like ice cream, Ellie?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Okay. So my first job, period, actually, outside of doing a little bit of maintenance work at a school, was with Baskin Robbins. And so, you know, all kinds of ice cream. And I had this manager and store owner, actually, who was a very dry personality, but he was very much a kind of a logical, practical individual. And there were certain things certain ways that he wanted things done. And so instructions were really important, but not only instructions up front, but then feedback after the fact, right? You do something and then you want to know if you're doing this thing right or not. We function very much the same way at Photographer's Edit. So you fill out your editing style, your profile, you submit that first order, you get it back. And immediately in the confirmation email that you get back when the order is completed, we ask for your feedback. And if you're just totally stoked on the order, awesome. We want to know that. We want our team to know that because they work really hard. But then if you're not totally stoked, you know, you say that white balance, it was actually a little bit too warm. I asked for a neutral white balance, or I asked for a cool white balance. In the portrait session, there were like 10 or 15 images. Those need to be fixed. Or maybe there's 30 or 40 images. The last thing that we want is for you to go back and have to do any of that work yourself. And we want to get better. We want to learn from this process. We want that feedback. So just like your boss or your employer, your manager, we give you feedback. We hope that you will give us feedback as well. So you get that order back. You jump in. You say, you know what? The white balance was off a little bit here in the section. And here are a couple of, again, visual examples. This is what you did. This is how I'd like it done. And then there's a little checkbox at the bottom of the page that says, redo my order for me. And we can redo that order for you if need be. So feedback is really, really important. Really, it's all rooted in communication. And if you're willing to take the time to communicate, and you know, this holds true for any relationship, whether it's a friendship or a romantic relationship, relationship with family members or an employer-employee, certainly with Photographer's Edit, it requires communication. If you're willing to commit to that communication, we will absolutely take incredible, incredible care of you. You just have to be willing to communicate.
I like that it's built in because I think a lot of people, and I can say that I've been here before, it took me time to learn how to give that feedback if it felt
yes.
critical or constructive.
Yes.
And so sometimes I was like, oh, whatever, I'll just fix it myself. But then it wouldn't get fixed. So I like that you build it in that way where it's encouraging people. No, really, tell me what you want fixed.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really great just support for the idea of being proactive and having a portrait session or a wedding edited during a time that's not quite so busy so that you really have time to dive in and take the time to because sometimes I think what holds us back from getting help is the time it takes to get help, even though it's going to reduce the pressure later. It might take a little more time up front to get someone into the right setting to really make sure that you're getting things just how you want them. So it's a great reason to be proactive, get that set up ahead of time so that you're not desperately yes. trying to get it set up when you're so stressed.
And that's such a great point. And I pointed out earlier that a lot of times when people come to us, they are in a kind of a desperate mode, right? Potentially during busy season, June, July, August, September, et cetera. And that's when things are craziest on our end. And so then you're just talking about a situation, at least for the photographer anyway, because they're already stressed. Now they're trying to figure out how to communicate what it is that they want. They've never really done that before. We're sole proprietors. So this idea of managing someone, in this case, you're managing us, Photographer's Edit. You're the employer, we're the employee. And learning how to communicate what you want to somebody, it can be a little bit of a challenge. I'm still, as CEO of a company and working with a team, I'm still learning this process. Of how to most effectively communicate and to empathize, but then also explain what I want and do it in a way that's not too wordy. I have a tendency of talking too much, as everyone listening in probably already figured out.
Makes you a great podcast host, right?
I hope so. But ultimately, it does require that communication. And so you're absolutely right, Allie. Taking the time right now, even, and we're, you know, April, May, that time frame, to go ahead and set everything up so that when busy season hits, you don't have to stress. That's getting taken care of for you, so you can focus on other things that are way more important to the client experience and to building your business and to actually living life. It's going to set you up for success in that realm.
Awesome. Okay, so if people are interested in learning more about Photographer's Edit or you or your podcast, let's just share all the places where people can find you.
100%. So it very easy, if you just go to photographers, the word photographer, plural with an S on the end, photographersedit.com. Of course, you can see the service there. And then there's a link there at the top of the page for podcasts. You can click on that. It'll take you to the podcast. Or you can just go directly to Boca Podcast, B-O-K-E-H. podcast.com. I'll say, Ali, too, I know that we've talked a lot about editing today. I'm in some ways, actually in many ways, very hesitant about that because I, even on my own podcast, we rarely ever talk about photographers edit. It's really important to me that I add value to the industry. And so that's why that there's a focus on philosophy today. On the podcast itself, you hear a lot about photography business and the philosophy that drives efficient workflow. We've done 270 episodes or so, or interviews or so. And so you can check that out at bookapodcast.com.
Great. No, well, I think you add a lot of value from all aspects. I personally was super curious to hear your perspective on outsourcing because it's something that I've had really high highs and low lows as I've gone into it myself. And so I think that others can relate, and it's great to hear from someone who's in that world, just talk about it, how to do it, how it works, pros and cons, all those things. So thanks so much for sharing from all perspectives. I think this is just incredibly helpful.
100%. It was truly my privilege, and I love hanging out with a fellow podcaster too. You're driving me to be better.
Thanks again.
Thanks for listening. Check out show notes at photofieldnotes.com. And if you loved this episode, leave your review on iTunes. See you next week.